Welcome to Let's Talk Wellness. It's time to have new conversations about mental health. Join Mara James as she guides us along this journey. And now, let's talk wellness.
Welcome to Let's Talk Wellness. I am your host, Mara James, and I want to say thank you for joining us today. These conversations are all about taking a deeper dive into understanding how we can better support children and their families to have better mental health and wellness. Let's Talk Wellness is brought to you by the Extraordinary Lives Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to improve children's mental health and emotional wellness. As a nonprofit organization, we're always open to receiving donations to help us on our mission. You can find out more information about ELF and more episodes at elfempowers.org, and you can find this link in the show information below. Now, let's talk wellness with today's guest, Lori Glickman. Lori is a child development specialist who works with children and their families up to the age of 5 years old, and she received her master's in social work and clinical studies. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you, Mara. I'm so happy to be here today.
We are so excited to have you and learn all of the knowledge and wisdom that you have personal experience with. And I'd love to start by saying that I wish I had a Lori type person when my child was younger, who's diagnosed with Asperger's and ADHD.
And I wish I did too. I wish I had a me.
And we say that because we both have children that adult children that were diagnosed with Asperger's at a young age. And we have shared many war stories together. And thankfully, both of our children not only survived, but are now thriving. And thankfully, we as parents made it through the war zone as well.
Not so easy. Not so easy, but
yes, absolutely.
Can be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you shared with me when we were talking the other day that most parents have a hard time saying that they need help. And it's one of the most important things we can do for ourselves and our children.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. So talk to us about behaviors and tantrums in young children.
So temper tantrums are really a hallmark of early childhood. We all kind of know one thing that does provoke a tantrum, and that's a very simple word. It has two letters. Can you guess what it is?
No.
Yeah, you are good.
Yeah, I had my children myself.
When we say no, our children have a normal tantrum. And it's a necessary part of social and emotional development. And what is a temper tantrum? It's an intense, as we know, emotional outburst. And does it come out of nowhere? Sometimes it looks like it does, but no, there's always something that produces the tantrum. There's always an A antecedent. I like to say A, B, C. Antecedent, behavior, and then consequence. And I will talk more about that in a little bit. Children want to feel a sense of control. And as they reach the age of between 2 and 3, that's why they call it the terrible twos, because the temper tantrums do get worse. And they're losing a sense of control. They want to feel a sense of control. There are things we can do to help with a sense of control. But let's talk about what a temper tantrum looks like. What do you do when you have a temper tantrum? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what our children do. We've all experienced it with our children, no matter how well behaved they can be. It's very important for us to allow our children to show these emotions. If we stifle the emotions, research has shown that these children will grow up with anger issues because they will have to keep a lot of this stuff inside. So, of course, we want to let them express their feelings, but to what extent? And we really don't want it to stop our lives from moving on. And I feel like a lot of the families that I do see, children's temper tantrums are stopping lives from moving on. They can't visit relatives. They can't say no, that word. So I do have some strategies, but let me talk a little bit more about the science behind the temper tantrum. So the brain consists of many different parts. And the prefrontal cortex, which is the higher part of the brain, is not developed yet in 2 or 3 year olds. It doesn't develop for a long time. And that's what really controls that behavior, that out of control behavior. And we know children naturally lack control. I lack control when it comes to chocolate. And you, do you lack control?
Milk chocolate, yeah. For sure.
Okay, milk chocolate, especially with stuff in it, like nuts and raisins and stuff. Okay.
I like the Heath bar.
Oh, love a Heath bar. Okay. So besides the word no, there are other reasons why children have tantrums. One is transitioning. And I saw this a lot with my son, who was diagnosed with a spectrum disorder. He's 32. But any transition from the car to the supermarket, from the supermarket to the whatever it was, a transition threw him off. I had to tell him so in advance what we were doing. Okay, we're going to the supermarket in 3 minutes. And I had to plan everything. It was everything had to be very punctual with him. And I had to stick to the plan, which life isn't always like that. You can't always stick to your plan. And there are things that I will talk about in a little while that can help with easy things that can help with transitions with your children. Children get frustrated easily. They can't put a toy together. They can't reach something. Anxiety, which I don't like to say little children have a lot of anxiety, but the lack of routine for some of these kids is very difficult. We know that. And like I said, we can't always stick to a route. Can't be perfect. Stuff happens, right? They may be hungry. That happens to me. I get hangry. Hangry, is that the word, right?
Hangry, yeah. Hungry and tired, right?
And tired, ooh. Right.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. So we know for us that's difficult. And also for some children, a lack of stimulation. Like some of these kids need to go out and run and jump. And I know that my daughter used to need to hang on things to feel better. Mm-hmm. I put a hanging bar. Remember those chin-up bars?
Yeah.
So she can hang and get like a release from that hanging when she was a little girl.
Yeah, we had the trampoline for our son. It's like, okay, go.
Right. And that we use that a lot with the children in my practice now, a trampoline, jump up and down, move around. I would say that tantrums are indicative. They're not defiant necessarily. It's a cry for help. Not necessarily like, oh, I'm in so much pain, I need help. It's just like, oh, I'm hungry. You're telling me too many things at once. I'm not going to clean up my toys, even though you told me to put my toys away. It's too many things when there are so many things going on for them to handle. We need to simplify things for a lot of our kids. So when an infant cries, we know a few things. What are they? Change the diaper. They're hungry.
Feed them.
Maybe they're cold or hot. Oh, you see my hearts? Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh. They just want to be held.
They just want it. We know they want something.
Yeah.
Or maybe they haven't. My son had a lot of ear infections. Mm-hmm. Or he had GERD. He was spitting up a lot. Something in his tummy bothered him.
Gassy belly, gassy tummy, that would be.
So there are different ways to minimize tantrums. You identify why the child's having, so remember I said A, B, C. So the antecedent, what is promoting the child to break down? We discussed a few of those things already. Anticipate, get to know your child. Well, you do usually, but anticipate what sets them off. And as a parent, what sets you off? And sometimes one piece of advice I give to a lot of my parents, if you're going to say the N-word to your children, that's no. Think about if you as a parent can handle saying no at that moment. If you know that no, I always do the sign for no. If you know that the word no is going to promote a tantrum, you as a parent, are you hungry? Are you tired? Are you overwhelmed? And sometimes you just have to give in. I want a cookie. No, we're eating dinner in an hour. If you're tired and you're hungry, say you can make a compromise. How about half a cookie?
Love it. Bargaining.
Yes.
We had
not all the time, but when you say no, it's important to stick to no. You can't waffle. You can't waver. Because kids are smart and they know no doesn't mean no. I'm going to get that cookie because if I keep screaming and my mom is tired and can't listen anymore, that cookie's mine. Mm-hmm. Right? So you anticipate what's going on. Decide as an adult if you can handle it or not. And then after the child has their tantrum, which hopefully doesn't last more than 15 minutes, you connect with your child. I'd like to give you a hug. I see you were sad. Use the emotions that you think they were feeling, which they probably were, sad, angry, you were upset. You don't have to say because you couldn't have the cookie or you only had half the cookie. And it really is an opportunity for us to teach toddlers how to manage their emotions. Tantrums are normal. It's important to know that. If tantrums last more than 15 minutes several times a day, then you need to start seeking help. Something is not right. It may be something physical that you just don't know.
Yeah.
It may be something situational. You need to speak to the pediatrician first, and there is a lot of help out there for you as the parent because you need to be calm in order to help your child be calm. When I was a young parent, it was very hard for me to be calm when my son was not regulated, when he was dysregulated. And it took a lot of work for me. I wish I had a Lori, remember that,
yeah.
To regulate. But I did learn that there were people out there to help me. I had one therapist who she was wonderful. She said, when your son is throwing a tantrum and you know he's okay, I want you to ignore it. And I want you to ignore it to a point that drool is dripping down your mouth, whatever it is. And they ended up going away. Some were, and behavior, as you know, gets bad before it gets better.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And then what happens when, first of all, parents tired, mom parent was tired, they're hungry, they have to deal with the child, and maybe it's they have three children with them and they have to deal with one. What advice do you give to that poor parent?
How to take care of all three?
Yeah, like I will tell you, to be honest, there are times when I just had to leave my gifted and challenging child at home. I couldn't deal with all three. It was like, you know, you're as strong as your weakest link. I just hate to say it was, I couldn't handle it always, or I had to bring like a babysitter with me. So there was two of us handling three kids.
I did the same thing. And I remember you told me, and I never forgot this, that when you're on an airplane and there's an emergency, the parents get the oxygen first and you ask why. Why? Because we need to be in control and breathing before we give the oxygen and help our children. So when you feel like you're losing it, you need a break and you need to figure out where you can get those resources on how to, is it a neighbor? Is it a friend? You know, whoever it is. I hired a young man to take, because Josh was so active and I wanted to give my daughter and myself some alone time. I hired it for it wasn't during the week, it was on a Saturday, to take him swimming, to take him to the park, whatever he needed to do to be active and enjoy somebody else. And it worked for a long time. It was great.
Yeah.
And I got a break too.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely need breaks. I mean, the parents' mental health, and, you know, people are probably asking you, well, where was your husband on that Saturday? Why couldn't he have taken him? And sometimes I would say husbands sometimes can't handle the challenging child. Sometimes they're working that weekend. So whatever it takes for the parent to be able to put their oxygen mask on first, and, you know, maybe sometimes it's the parent that needs that 5-minute timeout. And what you said about ignoring the child, so hard to do, but knowing that they're safe, that was profound advice that you received. I wish I received back then.
And the no thing, when you say no, think about if you can truly handle it at that moment. Can I handle a no right now? Can I say, no, you can't have this or whatever the child is tantruming about? Now, there are some times that tantrums just escalate and you feel like you have no control over what's going on. That's when you need to call a professional. Mm-hmm. And there are many professionals, there are many resources. So for example, so if you live in Orange County, if you live here, there are a ton of resources through different avenues. So if you have a baby, let's just say, and my son cried, was your son really colicky?
Thank God, no. And he was the best sleeper. I mean,
no, nope, didn't have that.
Yeah.
We had the crying infant.
Oh boy.
The only time he didn't cry was in the middle of the night when I fed him. But otherwise that, all the time. Mm. And I saw that, and I did have a parent here that had an infant that was crying a lot. There were other things going on, but crying a lot. There's a resource that you can call if you have a baby that cries a lot. And that's through, I wrote this down, First Five.
In California. Orange County or California?
Yeah. So First Five California is a great resource. Care Connection through Regional Center is great. If your child is under three, infant STEM. And then there are also private ways to get help for your child. So I have the training to come into the home and help assess what's going on. I take a look at the antecedent to the tantrum. We talk a lot. I look at the antecedent. What started this tantrum? And I will see things that maybe you can't see. You're a tired mom. You're a tired dad. You've had enough. Maybe the child's too stimulated. Maybe there are too many toys in the room. Maybe you're talking too much. You know, there are a lot of things. I have a parents who talk way too much to their kid and he is overstimulated. And I said to the mom, you know that song from the show Hamilton, Smile, Talk Less, Smile More? She started singing it. I said, put that in your head. Talk less, smile more. You don't have to explain. You don't have to answer every question. You don't have to explain every event. It's exhausting. Wow. And you don't want to exhaust yourself as a parent.
And that's beautiful advice because my 25-year-old, when he's home visiting and sitting at the table and mom likes to talk, 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 the voice in my head is now saying, talk less. And if I talk
to him, more.
And if I talk less, one of my dogs will walk, that's always next to him. I swear she's like a therapy dog. She will lay on her back and make him pet her belly. So he, you know, to break up that, but that is such, wow. Yeah, talk less.
Mom, more. Got to do something else.
Yeah. And then who knew that? Wow. Profound.
So I had one family that I was working with. He was 4 years old. He had a diagnosis of autism, something else, something comorbid. And he was not taking directions. His body was all over the place at home. Mom said, I really have a hard time controlling this child. I need some help. I need some resources. I said, I would love to come in and take a look and see what's happening. And I came into the home and she had 1,000 bazillion toys, a ball pit. It was too many things. He couldn't decide on one thing. He just ran back and forth. And when we started taking things out of the room and there was less stimulation for him, he was able to focus more and he was able to regulate his body a lot more in the home.
Oh, that is so interesting. And you said the word comorbid and it scared me. So I want to take a really break. No, it's all good. I want to take a brief break and we'll be right back and we'll start going and hear so much more great advice from Lori. So everybody stay tuned.
We hope that you're enjoying today's Let's Talk Wellness podcast. And if you have a topic that you would like us to explore, we would love to hear from you. Simply email us at info@elfempowers.org. That's info@elfempowers.org. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Wellness. I am your host, Mara James, and today we're speaking with Lori Glickman, a child developmental specialist. Welcome back, Lori.
Thank you.
So can you share with us what that word was that sounded really scary? Comorbidity.
Comorbidity. And it's, I think, like the Latin derivative of morbid isn't like death or something yeah. bad.
Yeah.
But comorbidity means two issues. And the two issues, let's say a child has autism and also another diagnosis. It could be sensory processing disorder, which a lot of children on the spectrum have. Mm-hmm. So that's really comorbid. I know that's a big word and a scary okay. word.
Yeah, I was like, wait, morbidity. It sounds morbid. Yeah. Beautiful. Right. Thank you for clarifying. And then what you were sharing with us before about children having a hard time, having meltdowns, having a hard time transitioning. What about you talked when we were offline about when someone's having a problem separating from their caregiver, the picky eaters, about the clothes they wear, their smells, the textures, and all that good stuff.
Well, separation from a caregiver should stop. This is what the professionals say, should stop around 14 months. They would like to see a child able to, so that's why you play peekaboo with your baby. Peekaboo, I see you.
Ah, yeah.
You want your child to see you and then not see you and know you're coming back. So that's why peekaboo is so important.
Wow.
So 14 months, that's what we'd like to see developmentally. And that's based on standardized testing. And the evaluation that most of the professionals use are always standardized testing, which I don't agree 100% with, but it's a set, you know, it says this is what we should look at. And that's how we can make goals and say, this is what we'd like your child to be doing. What was the other question you asked me?
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, I know. I gave you a whole list. So
I'm forgetting.
So that was the, so when there's a hard time separating and you gave it, yeah.
So we work on separating at little increments at a time. We allow the child to cry and we sing a song like Mommy Comes Back. She always comes back. But what's so interesting is that I had a horrible time separating from my mom as a little girl. Mm. So when my kids had a hard time separating from me, I had to figure out a way to take care of myself. And that's when my hard work really came into play as a parent. And I sought out help for myself because I was so distressed when my child had such a hard time separating from me. When I was able to work at that feeling, why I felt that way, and I was feeling calm about it, my children became calm. And that was a huge
light bulb, a big light bulb.
Yeah, like Oprah says, it was my aha moment.
Yeah, these kids.
I really had to take care of myself and figure out me. You know, just because you become a parent doesn't mean you're going to parent and feel okay. It's a lot of work. It's hard.
And it's amazing because you're talking about at these young ages. I was working with a client whose daughter had anxiety. When she was going off, well, first it was kindergarten, right? So the summer before kindergarten, she was so nauseous, throwing up, the daughter, but it was I said, as a mother on a scale of 1 to 10? She goes, I was 11. And I said, well, she's empathic. She feels you. She's feeding off of you. And it was so powerful. So again, back to that oxygen mask.
Yep. Same thing. Yeah. The same thing.
Yeah.
I always say to my mom, who's still alive, and I talk to about a lot of things with my adult children. And if I have a crisis, I can call her and say, you know what? You should be paying for therapy for me because you're the source of all my stuff. It's like, no, you're over it. You're good. And she's right.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, we don't blame anybody. We're not victims. We just get to grow and learn. And so then what about the picky eaters, the ones that have issues with clothing or smells and textures?
So we call that children who have sensory issues. And when we sensory, it's the way they feel. It's the, like you, the way they smell, the way they taste things. There's a difference between a picky eater and a problem eater.
Oh.
So a picky eater has a decreased range of a variety of foods and maybe has 30 or more foods in their food range. A problem eater has a restricted range of a variety of foods and eats less than 20 foods. So that's one thing. A picky eater, because there is a difference, can tolerate new foods on their plate and they're able to touch. Sometimes we tell a child to kiss a new food. They're able to put it to their lips and then tolerate it. A child who is a problem feeder will cry, scream, tantrum, fall apart when you introduce the new food, a complete refusal of the food. And parents are very focused on what they're feeding their children. Now, this is a little embarrassing, but my son ate hot dogs for a whole year. That's all he would eat. But now my son eats everything and anything except for tomatoes. So what I've seen with a lot of children, not just my son, kids outgrow this eating phase. But sometimes there are medical issues. And that's when you need someone to come take a look and refer your child to either a nutritional program, a feeding clinic. They have feeding clinics all over the country at all the children's hospitals. And if your child is under three in any state in America, you can call early, you Google early intervention. You'll get a ton of resources on who to call, where to go.
Beautiful. And so was the number, was you said 30 items, the difference between the two? Was that?
No, a picky eater has 30 or more foods in their food range.
Okay.
A problem eater usually eats less than 20 foods.
Oh, interesting.
And you can see, I see when these parents come in, that's all they talk about.
Oh, for sure. Right. And it's interesting. A lot of parents I've worked with that have issues with their kids eating. The parent had an eating disorder growing, mm-hmm. you know, when they were younger, maybe yep. then. And it's funny, you're lucky your son had at least the hot dogs for protein. Mine was obsessed with pasta, which, you know, simple carbs, the worst thing. So don't judge me, but I will say that I would feed him Reese's peanut butter cup because in my mind it had protein and he ate it. And you know what? It did what it did. He's, you know, getting his PhD in math, so it didn't ruin his brain cells. And I love that you said that they grow out of it because that is so profound. Like when my son was scared to would never touch the grass or the sand. And like one day they do, it's wow.
And they do outgrow these things.
That's huge. That cannot be reiterated enough. They do. And like having that faith and obviously not just hoping that it does and working with them. You said something that I caught really quickly about kissing the food. What was that? Yeah. What was that?
So in early intervention, a lot of times we have kids and just kids and toddlers in general, they don't want to go, I don't eat the broccoli, you know, pew, it smells, whatever. We just have them put it to their lips or lick it or kiss it and then put it down on your plate. Mm. No forcing of eating. We do not force eating because that obviously, it from research and what we've seen, the force of eating creates issues.
More control issues, huh?
Yeah. More control.
Yeah.
More control. And then there are these children that we were talking about, clothes, who don't like the way tags feel. They're just very sensitive, highly sensitive children. People, there are so many kids like that out there that they've created clotheslines through Target that they don't have tags.
Wow. Wow.
So it's not only your kid. And when I talk about needing people, you need to reach out to people. I always allow myself to be a resource. People that I meet, just talking to them, I give them my number. I say, if you have questions about your child, I would love to help you.
Yeah, been there, done it. What I love about you is that you not just talk the talk, you walk the walk, right? Having that experience. So you have that empathy and compassion, understanding what they went through is profound.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get back to that oxygen mask. You want to take a flight somewhere? Any ideas and suggestions that you have how parents can do some self-care for themselves to help them be on top of their game with their energetic or challenging child?
Well, we know sleep is very important.
Yeah.
I know it's hard. Oh, make sure you have 7 hours of sleep. Well, if your child's not sleeping through the night after a year, you need to figure out what is going on. Are you enabling this child? Are you still giving them the breast or the bottle? Talk to your pediatrician about what your child does need and what your child doesn't need at this point after a year. There's a great website that I've referred families to, and it's Taking, T-A-K-I-N-G, Cara, C, because her name is Cara, C-A-R-A, babies. Taking Cara babies.
Oh, like Cara, very cute.
Right. And she has a very basic elementary way of getting your child to sleep through the night. Now, I would not do this without consulting your pediatrician. Always consult your pediatrician if you're making a big life change, but it's important for the child to sleep through the night, and it's important for you to sleep through the night. That's number one. Finding the time to have fun. If you're married and you're in a good marriage and you enjoy your spouse, try and get a babysitter for one night. Even if you don't have the money, go for a walk, pack a sandwich, go hide up in your bedroom, get a babysitter. That's where you should put your money, because your relationship with your spouse is so important. And so many times children who are a little difficult divide that. They can be the lightning rod that divides it.
I love that. And you know what you're talking about before? I wrote something down this morning. I'm going to read it now because it was totally related. Like, this is really hard. This is harder. It's easier to say, and it's harder to receive and do. What it's something about what the parent wants versus what the child needs, right? The parent, I'm working with a two-year-old, a parent of a two-year-old, and she's nursing the baby all night long. He's in her bed. She's not sleeping well. She realized that she might be using it to keep her husband away, but, you know, and like now she's working with a therapist, psychiatrist, but you know, there's a lot of times it's what the parent wants. If a parent doesn't feel safe, the child not being in the room, they want to keep the child in the room for the wrong reasons. It's so much of our mishigas that we're putting onto them. And it ruins our children, you know, and, you know, yeah. So listen, we've all done things like that. We don't know what we don't know, but just learning from it.
Yeah, like your Reese's peanut butter cup.
You want
Yum. Did you take bites? Because I would have.
Yeah, no, I luckily I wasn't a lover of
peanut butter.
It was, it's just so, yeah.
I love that.
So what would you say that kids are picking up on for the parents' stress, exhaustion, and fatigue? Are they picking up on it and pushing their buttons more? How does that play?
Yes, I think it's called negative attention.
Oof.
And they see that, yep, they see that their parents, even though their parents could be sitting, you can be present and not be present. Kids are smart. They feel it. And they react to it. And I think that's what happens a lot of times.
Wow.
So if someone's really struggling, there are people out there to help them. There are people like myself. There are therapists that do parent-child interaction therapy. You just Google PCIT.
Interesting. I haven't heard of that.
There are a lot of different resources. One thing that I've done for a lot of family is given them resources. So for example, like the babies that some families have, these babies that cry. There's a hotline number that you can call that will put you in touch with someone to talk about colic and how to handle colic and how to take care of yourself. So there's always a resource. Google, we're so lucky to have the computer and be able to Google things.
Yeah. That's amazing. And what type of children do you generally and families do you generally work with?
All different types of children from, I would say, the ages of 1 to 5 who are really struggling at home.
And do they have or will they eventually receive a diagnosis, which I
not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily. They may not even have thought, oh, is there a diagnosis here? They may not know. And I would say, listen, there's a chance that something else is going on. I would give them the words to give to the pediatrician.
Yeah.
I would help them with the script, what to say. Maybe their child needs physical therapy because they have a weak core, the mm-hmm. weak stomach, and they're not moving the way they should be. You know, I'll see all those red flags.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Laura, you've been such an amazing wealth of information. What is the best way for people to get in touch with you directly?
So my email is lrglick, G-L-I-C-K 53, my age forever.
Yeah.
At gmail.com.
And we'll put that in the show link also.
Okay.
Beautiful. I just want to tell you, as I do daily, and all of our friends watching and listening out there, that you are amazing.
No, you're amazing.
And don't let anybody else tell you anything else. And yeah, beautiful. Have a beautiful day, everybody.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Let's Talk Wellness. This podcast has been brought to you by the Extraordinary Lives Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. If you would like to listen to more conversations like this, we invite you to subscribe to our mailing list at www.elfempowers.org to be notified when our episodes are published. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to bringing you our next conversation on Let's Talk Wellness.